At a million other choices, we discuss some dark and troubling topics. If dark and troubling is not your thing, mine might not be the right podcast for you. If you like your dark topics discussed without pesky ads and are looking for some additional content from me, you can sign up for the exclusive feed. The link should be in the show notes, and if not, you can find me on redcircle.com. I research each case myself, and I do my best to use a wide variety of sources, preferably directly from court documents when they're available, to ensure that the information is as accurate as possible. But I cannot verify the truth of all reporting that is publicly available. So this episode has been produced for information and entertainment purposes only and should be taken as such. And with all my legal and publicity stuff out of the way, let's listen to what words I will inadvertently mispronounce today.
And I know the answer to the question that everyone keeps asking. I know why you did this. You did this simply because you were not in a cage.
But was she dead on the day I arrived?
She was dead when you killed her.
I agree with the family. I hope you die in prison as well.
It disgusts me that you are allowed to exist.
Today's case is one that I'm just not sure about. I heard it about it a few years ago, kind of vaguely listened to the details. But then when I started doing a deep dive, and now I'm just not sure about it. So let's go through and listen to the evidence, and then maybe you can help me make a decision about what happened here. This is the murder of Amy Mullis. Now, first of all of the coverage that I have found on this case is really polarized. Like, people feel really strongly one way or the other, and there isn't change in anybody's minds about it. So today we're going to kind of pretend that we're on the jury, and we're just going to try and figure this out. But I will warn you that I'm telling this story from the kind of from the prosecution side, like their direct examination of things, but I'm going to be playing devil's advocate, just trying to kind of poke holes in their theories. So we'll start with some background information. Amy was born Amy Fuller to parents Robert and Peggy in Ames, Iowa on January 23rd, 1979. And then she grew up with her brother in Eldora, graduating high school in 1997, and then going to Kirkwood Community College, where she got her RN degree and started working at Cedar Rapids ER, and then moved on to the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. Her parents divorced at some point. Both mom and dad remarried, adding four step-siblings to her immediate family. And according to her obituary, she loved the outdoors, camping, fishing, and farming. Now, the farming part comes a little bit later. She also loved to design and make t-shirts, and she was a big fan of the Iowa Hawkeyes. In 2003, at the Delaware County Fair, she met Todd Mullis, who was from Earlville, and he had purchased a farm, it was a hog farm, in 1999, which he was working on growing and expanding it. And the couple married on September 11th, 2004, at a Lutheran church in Manchester, and they moved together to this farm, which he did quickly expand into. Like, over the next 10 years, it became three hog farms. And they had three children together, the oldest, Tristan, and then there was Taylor, was a daughter, and then Wyatt, the youngest, a son. And when they first got married, and for the first about 10 years of their marriage, Amy continued to work as a nurse at the hospital. Now, this is kind of my thinking about that, is that yes, Amy liked the outdoors, and she was not opposed to living on a farm, but she also really liked her job at the hospital. And when you marry someone, you don't usually have to marry their job. And if my husband said he wanted to go become a farmer, I'd be like, sure, let's go. And I would be happy living on a farm. Just don't make me do anything. Like, I want to putter on a farm and take pictures for like my Instagram account and do what I want to do when I want to do it. I do not want to be hoisting bales of hay or milking cows or whatever. Like, I'm pretty opposed to manual labor for the most part. But what I think when it comes to farming, you wind up being a farmer. Like, even though he would have had staff on the farm, farming is kind of an all hands on deck kind of job. It's a lifestyle, really. Now, I could be wrong about that, but that is my assessment of the situation. So they were married for 10 years when in 2013, Amy started to have an affair with a guy from work. Now, I don't think this was a doctor. I think it was just somebody that she met at work. And however you feel about affairs, like, that's not really the point. So either Todd found out about it, or it came clean about it, admitted to it. And the couple started counseling and they were trying to work it out. And so at this point, Amy quit her job, and she came to the farm to stay and be a stay-at-home mom for the kids. Now, whether this was a decision that she made on her own or something that Todd wanted her to do to sort of keep an eye on her, it remains a matter of debate, but based on her brother Jeff and her stepmom Eileen, it appeared that she had made that choice on her own, and that she was just, it was part of the decision to try to work it out, to work on her marriage. She was dedicated as a mom to her three kids, but it doesn't sound like she particularly enjoyed the working on the farm part of it. And the big consensus here is that Todd worked it out with Amy because he had built this farm and he was afraid of losing half of it half of the money financially or losing the kids. He also didn't consider it socially acceptable to get divorced. Now, Iowa is a no-fault divorce state, so having an affair would not mean that Amy would be precluded from like an equitable division of property, and she could still get custody. So I could see that from his point of view. It's going to be a lot cheaper and just kind of better all around if they can figure out how to put it all behind them. But in 2018, a few things kind of all happened. The first thing was that in June of 2018, Amy started to have a second affair with a guy named Jerry Frazier. And Jerry was married himself and was also one of Todd's farmhands. And when going through their phone bill, Todd noticed that there was a lot of texts between Amy and Jeff, and he thought that that was suspicious. So he went to Jeff and flat out asked him if he was sleeping with his wife, and Jeff denied it. And Todd wasn't really feeling that that was the truth. So he went to Jeff's wife, her name's Christy, and laid out his suspicions to her. And she's like, "You're crazy. None of that's like, you're out of your mind." So he thought about it for a couple of days, and then he actually apologized to both of them and just said, "Okay, you're right. I'm probably just being crazy about it." But he was still suspicious. And so when one of their mutual friends found out about it from Amy, she was like, "Amy, you've put yourself in a really dangerous position here. Like, Todd's going to kill you." Now, there is testimony about this, but I'm not going to bother playing it because, like, she was having an affair with this Jeff guy. And Todd's, or anybody saying, you know, "Todd's going to kill you" about it, to me, that's kind of like saying, like, "Oh, my mom will kill me if she finds weed in my room." Like, it's kind of just a saying, so you can't really take it as fact. So I'm not going to review a bunch of testimony to sort of prove that she was having this affair with this Jeff guy. She was. And it still doesn't mean that she deserved to be murdered, if she was in fact murdered. However, it does provide a pretty good motive for both Todd, Jeff, maybe Christy, his wife, but there might have been a couple other players in the story that might have had a motive as well. But when Amy found out that there was these rumors going around about her having an affair, she told her friend, like, "You got to shut that stuff down because Todd is going to kill her if he finds out about it." And at some point, even though their son Tristan was 13 at the time, he had told his mom, Amy, like, "If Dad finds out that you're going to have an affair, he will kill you," which I find really super odd because, like, why your kid would know anything about any affairs, anybody's affairs? Like, Tristan should know nothing going on with his parents' relationship. I know that kids are not stupid and they can feel tension and all of that going on in a marriage, but him knowing, like, even just about the first affair is just, I don't know, the whole thing's kind of icky. But he does testify about it, but that the information came from his dad, not his mom. Now, we'll get to that bit here in a bit. But first, I'm going to tell you some other stuff that that was going on that year that the state thinks is super important for all of us to know about. So about a month or so after this affair started, Amy started talking to some of her close friends and some family that she thought she was in a good enough place to leave her marriage and branch out on her own. Not necessarily with this Jeff guy, because it didn't sound like he was going to be leaving his wife for her. So she was just kind of, you know, in the background looking around for jobs and for a place to live, like on the down low. But she had told people that Todd would freak out over it if he found out that she was kind of thinking about a divorce, because he was adamant that he did not want to lose half of everything and that he didn't believe in divorce. And she was just scared about him finding out about her wanting a divorce. So in August of 2018, Amy's grandma passed away, and she asked her brother Jeff if he would store some of her grandma's things for her so that when she finally did leave, she'd have a few pieces of furniture. She also expressed that she was a little worried that Tristan was going to be pretty angry with her for leaving the marriage, especially since he was really close with his dad and he was the one that would one day take over the farm because he enjoyed the farming. It was something that he enjoyed doing with his dad. And then in October, she still had not left the marriage, but her uncle had an aneurysm and was really sick. So her being a nurse or just a family member, she spent a lot of time at the hospital sort of caring for him and visiting. And Todd apparently wasn't particularly very sympathetic about that and told her that she needed to be at home and caring for the kids, who at that time would have been 13, 10, and 8. On November 6th, Amy, she was having some issues with some heavy menstrual cycles, so she had a D&C procedure. Now, this is a day surgery, like you are sort of in and out in the same day, but I mean, with any surgery, you're supposed to go home, you rest, and you're not allowed to lift anything more than 10 pounds for usually, they say, about 4 to 6 weeks. But everybody's a bit different. Like, I've had multiple surgeries, including 2 C-sections. And I was, you know, lugging around a 10-pound baby the next day. So I'm not really sure what that expectation really is. I have never had a D&C, but I imagine afterwards you're tired, you're sore for a couple of days, but it's a fairly quick recovery if you don't have any complications. Now, somebody can tell me in the comments if I'm way off base there. So on November 10th, so this is 4 days later after this procedure, a friend of hers texted her to check in on her and see how she was doing. And she said, quote, "Thanks, okay. Things still very tense around here, just not sure of anything anymore," end quote. Now, early that morning, Todd and Tristan went off to one of the other hog farm sites that they had to check on some stuff. And they returned to the house. Amy had prepared breakfast for everyone. November 10th was a Saturday, so all the kids were home from school. Now, I'm going to tell you the series of events that happened according to both Tristan and Todd. And then I'll tell you what the medical examiner found, and then we're just going to discuss it. And I'm going to play some testimony for you, and we'll just try and figure this out. So after breakfast, Tristan and Todd went out to the North Hog Barn. Now, the farm property is kind of like a circle of buildings. We have kind of an open space in the center. There's the house that they live in. And if you were to walk out the front door of the house and look straight ahead, there are 2 hog barns side by side. They're like really long buildings about the length of a football field. If you turn to the right instead, there's this red colored shed, which is kind of like a barn, but a little bit more shed-like. Like, it's not as big as a barn, but it's larger than your average shed. And there's also some silos on that side. But the main building on that side is this red shed barn thing. And to the left of the house is like, it looks almost like a small hangar, but it's another like long shed with a small office at the end of it. At 10:12, Amy texts Jeff Frazier. Now, that's the guy she's having the affair with, and says, "Do you know what I'm doing today? Cleaning fucking light fixtures in the barn, WTF. She then arrives at the same North Hog Barn that Todd and Tristan are in. They're getting some baby pigs are coming sometime. I don't know if it was that day or, but they were planning for it. So Todd's arranging some nipple feeders in the pen and Tristan's loading in heaters from the storage area, which I assume is that sort of that metal shed on the left side from the house. And then Amy is using a 5-gallon pail as like a step stool to clean the lights, like the light fixtures. Both Todd and Tristan noticed that Amy seemed a little unsteady and asked if she was okay. And she said she was fine. But they both said she should probably go back into the house and rest a little bit more. And Todd said, oh, like on your way, can you grab the pet carrier from the shed? Now that would be the red building, and put it either in the yard or on like the front porch of the house. Now, Todd, the reason why he wanted it is he was going to gather up some, there was a litter of kittens that had been born recently that were on the property because he was worried that they were going to get run over with all the commotion when these piglets were delivered.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best in class equipment we've always had with most clubs open 24 hours so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.
So Amy walked towards the red barn and then Todd and Tristan just carried on with what they were doing. And they stayed in the barn working. So Tristan took over the cleaning of the light fixtures for it was about an hour and a half. Now, this is important. The only time Tristan said that his dad was not in the barn was when his dad went into that little office beside the barn for like a couple of minutes. And he, as in Tristan, went and grabbed a drink of water from the garden hose beside the barn, which he originally said was like a minute and 40 seconds. But then later he said he wasn't 100% sure how long it actually was, but it wasn't long. Like it was a long period of time. Now, the two younger kids, Taylor and Wyatt, were in the house as far as anyone knows. They never came out into the yard at all during the time. There were no cars heard coming or going from the property, but a hog barn full of pigs, I would imagine it's hard to hear anything at all going on. So about an hour and a half after Amy had left the barn, Todd noticed that the pet carrier was still not out in the yard or on the porch. So he figured she must have forgot about it or something. So he said, asked Tristan to go and get it for him and then put it out. Now, to me, this is a little bit strange. Like, if it was such an important thing, like, why did somebody else have to do it? Like, again, it's a 2-minute maybe job. You go to the red barn, you grab this pet carrier, you put it out in the yard. And actually, you don't even really need to do that until you actually are ready to go and gather up the kittens. But he didn't. Like, he asked Amy first to do it. She obviously didn't do it. So then he asked Tristan to go and do it for him. Again, it's a little bit strange. So Tristan goes out to the red shed and finds Amy on her hands and knees, but face down. And there's a corn rake stuck in her back. Now, a corn rake is kind of like a pitchfork, but the tines are more curved, so more like a metal rake that you would use for your garden, but with longer and like stabbier tines. And there's 4 tines on it. That's really important to remember. So Tristan yelled for Todd, and he checked if she had a pulse or was breathing. Todd ran over and saw Amy in exactly that position. That Tristan says, yelled for Tristan to go get the truck and pull it up to the shed, which I don't think is strange for a 13-year-old on a farm to be able to drive a truck. He's just not allowed to drive on the public road. And I should mention that this shed has a lot of stuff in it. Like there's a lot of shelving units. So where she was found was this really quite narrow passageway between some shelves. And because it was narrow, Todd says he had to pull the rake out of her back in order to get her through the passageway. And it's a fairly narrow doorway. The other thing I should mention is that this was in November and in Iowa. So she was dressed in, she had a shirt, I believe a sweater over the shirt, then she had a parka or like a winter coat on. So that's why there wasn't a lot of blood all over the place. Okay, so Tristan brings the truck over. Tristan got out, went into the passenger side, because again, he can't drive on the road. And Todd put Amy sort of on Tristan's lap, and then Todd starts driving to the hospital and calls 911. That call comes in at 12:01, so as he's driving. And now I'm going to play you a little part of that call. The whole call is like 7 minutes long, but I just want to give you sort of a feel for what's happening at the time and what everybody sounds like.
Neither. Okay.
Good, Forrest. Did I do anything? There's nothing.
Okay. What is your name, sir?
Todd Morris.
And what are you driving?
White Chevy.
A white Chevy.
I can be closer.
A white Chevy truck.
Just an issue.
No, I don't feel anything.
Damn, she's there. Cover her up a little bit. She has her fucking pants off. I just gotta get her out of this. Do you feel anything?
25 inches, sir.
Do you see anything? Feel anything?
Okay. 28.5 Manchester.
Where's the other kids?
Got a subject with his wife in the vehicle, unresponsive. They're coming to Oneida. I asked him to stop there. We've got the ambulance paged out. Can you head that way?
Can I head a little closer?
He said Oneida.
Can I go a little closer?
I've got an officer almost to where you're at.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll turn off so they can get there.
Go ahead.
They can pull right in here. God. Oh.
Why? I'll back up my name.
I'm just east of Oneida.
Okay. All right.
You feel anything?
Oh.
Amy.
You're needed code 3.
Amy.
Okay, sir, what happened that she's not conscious or breathing?
She fell on a fork. I had to put a goddamn fork on her. It was an old fork sitting in somewhere, and then she was halfway out of the barn. Like,
okay.
She saw him get out, and then Tristan yelled, and I ran over there, and
okay.
She's laying there.
And pulled it out of her.
I couldn't get her out of the barn. The door's real narrow, and she's not responding.
Was this like a pitchfork?
Sort of an old corn forks.
Right. It's like a side
curved
fork.
Yeah, well, it's kind of got a curve on it. I don't know how that freaking happened. I'm sorry about my cursing.
Okay. So is she bleeding?
I can't tell. I just
okay.
When I seen it, she was face down.
Who pulled the pitchfork out of her? How old is she?
I couldn't get her out of the door.
How old is she?
What is she, 38?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
She's
38 or 39.
Okay.
She is not responding.
Okay.
Come on.
Sir, do you feel comfortable doing CPR?
I can try. I'll try anything.
Okay.
I'll try anything if I can. Do I have to get her? I guess she's laying on my son's lap.
Is she flat on the... Are you able to get her flat across maybe the seat?
Well, it's from the back of the truck. But she's laying on my son's lap.
So the ambulance arrives while they were still on the road and takes Amy to the hospital where she is pronounced dead. Now, at this point, everything that I think has been testified to is completely believable to me. Like the stuff that they were doing in the hog barn, that all of them were in there, that they wouldn't have been able to hear anything going on outside of the hog barn. The fact that he sent her on her way back to the house to the shed to just quickly grab this pet carrier, the fact that he had to take the rake out of her back to get her through the doorway, Tristan driving the truck and then putting her on the passenger seat, sort of on his lap, the fact that they didn't actually start a 911 call until they were on the road, the fact that they decided to put her in the car at all and drive her because, of course, it's a fairly remote area. If you're waiting for an ambulance to come, those those side roads and those are kind of hard to find, it does make more sense that he should at least try to meet them halfway there. But the medical examiner that did the initial examination of her discovered that there was 6 puncture wounds on her back. Now, he also, this particular medical examiner, also observed injuries to her chin, her cheekbone, on her knees, and then the knuckles of each of her hands. Now, the injury to her chin had both crush and scraping components to it, but there was no debris in the wound from hitting a surface, so it wasn't from a fall. Now, because Todd was the one that had reported that she had fallen on a corn rake, he wanted to see it. And when he saw that there was these 4 tines and not 6 of them, he contacted the state forensic pathologist and had her do an autopsy on her. So we're going to listen to a little bit of what she has to say. Now, you might ask why I'm not playing any of the defense sort of cross-examination in here. Well, that's because under the law, the prosecution has to prove beyond any reasonable doubt that Todd killed Amy and that nobody else could have done it. The defense doesn't actually have to say a word. And quite frankly, in this case, they barely put on any defense, which is really not good. So we kind of go by the prosecution and just try to determine if they can prove their case.
Exhibit 59 on the top, near the right side, do you see the edge of what you describe as puncture wound F?
Yeah, F actually was the only one that was on the left side of the back, and F entered the skin, the soft tissue, and it entered the left chest cavity as well. Neither the ones that entered the left chest cavity injured organs in that cavity, but they did enter the cavity.
Now, Doctor, I'm going to show you State's Exhibit number 60. Is this a different view of the puncture wounds?
This one is. You can't see the one that's underneath her armpit very well, but you can see better the one on the left side of the chest that entered the left chest cavity. So you see 5 of the total 6 puncture wounds.
So in this photograph, we don't see what you classified as puncture wound A that's near that chest tube underneath her right arm.
Exactly.
But you do see the other 5.
Correct.
Now, Doctor, based on your exam, could you tell which puncture wound was fatal?
So technically, any sort of penetrating wound, like a puncture wound, can be fatal. You can get an infection that can lead to your death that way. In terms of a more rapidly fatal wound, the 4 puncture wounds that entered her chest cavity were more likely to contribute to her death. So that would be A, B, E, and F.
Now, based on your exam, could you tell the direction of the wound paths?
So there were 2 different directions of the 6 puncture wounds. The rightmost wounds, A, B, C, and D, so the one by her chest tube underneath her armpit, the one left to it, and then the 2 that are on top of each other, those all go from back to front. So when we describe direction, we do it in terms of anatomic position. So anatomic position is with the person standing straight, looking straight forward with their feet forward. And then their hands are down by their side with their palms out, and so your thumbs are facing out. So with Miss Mullis in that position, those 4 wounds went back to front, right to left, and downward. The leftmost, E and F, also went back to front, right to left, but they went upward.
And what do those different directions indicate to you?
To me, they indicate that she would have to be impaled with the rake at least twice.
And when you say at least twice, can you tell exactly how many times she was struck?
I cannot. You could consider 1 penetrating wound for each of these injuries, but at least twice, possibly 3 times.
And why do you say possibly 3 times?
So puncture wound D, the bottommost puncture wound, if you think about the corn rake with the tines in succession, the one under her armpit, B and C, tend to be in a line, and those all go in the same direction. That bottommost puncture wound also goes in that direction, but to consider that within the line of the tines on the corn rake is difficult. So to me, it possibly represents a 3rd strike.
So doctor, based on your exam, can you say that Amy Mullis' body was struck at least 2 times with the corn rake?
Correct.
Possibly 3.
Yes.
So now we're sure that this is a murder. And they start with their usual suspects. So that's Todd, obviously, Jeff's wife, Christy. Now, Jeff and Christy were both eliminated. Now, what they used to eliminate them, I don't really know. I mean, we have to trust that they had really good alibis. So that left Todd. So they do a search of the house and they grab two cameras that covered most of the property, like surveillance cameras, but there was no cameras that pointed to that red shed. And they also picked up Todd's iPad, which he kept on his tractor, and found, and they find that at some point, okay, that, and the court documents even say earlier in the year, so we don't have exact dates, that Todd used his iPad to search for things like, did ancient cultures kill adulterers, thrill of the kill, thrill of the hunt, famous quote, no thrill like that of hunting man, once you hunt man, you will always feel the thirst, what happens to cheaters in history, killing unfaithful women, what to do with large open chest wounds, and organs in the body. Now, all the ones about the thrill of the killer, whatever. Now, Todd says that him and Amy were watching a movie together and wanted to know some quote. To me, that makes sense. That a lot of times you're like, what was that? And you know, you put those things into your Google search. The one about open chest wounds. Well, apparently his daughter was searching for something. She was taking some kind of first aid class, and the organs in the body was something one of the other kids was researching. I really don't put a lot of stock into Google search histories. I might have mentioned that mine looks terrible until you put it into context of why I would be looking at some of the stuff that I do. But if I search something like arsenic poisoning and then like 2 weeks later my husband dies of arsenic poisoning, like that's not good. But for the most part, Google searches, I don't really put a lot of stock into them. So Todd's interviewed, which again, I'm not going to bother playing any of that because Todd doesn't really say anything incriminating and he barely gets a word in edgewise anyways, other than saying that he had a healthy marriage. But the reason that they played that in court was because he sounded really stoic and kind of flat, and they found that to be suspicious. But for me, after hearing testimony from like Amy's brother, her stepmom, both Todd and Tristan, they all sound like that. So again, I'm not putting a lot of stock into the fact that they're not really emotional. So up to this point, like I'm really not hearing anything that points to murder other than the testimony of the medical examiner, which I have to trust at this point that she's the expert. She's looking at like depth of wounds, the direction of the wounds, all the science stuff, because like I would be thinking, oh, maybe she got, you know, like scared by a snake. She fell on the rake. She tries to get up because it, you know, it wouldn't immediately be a fatal injury. And she probably, if you fell backwards onto something, she might not even know that she had actually been stabbed by something. So she's like, you know, trying to get up, falls back over. Then she finally winds up on her hands and knees before she succumbs to her injuries. So what the prosecution does here is they play the 911 call in court and determine that Todd whispers something under his breath. So I'm going to play that part for you, because I honestly believe if I tell you ahead of time what they think that he says, you're going to hear it and then you're not going to be able to unhear it. So I want you to be able to listen to it like completely unbiased here.
Keep going. You're doing fine.
Okay.
Keep going.
Come on, respond. She's cold. Come on. Come on. Come on. Good. Come on. Oh, shit. Well, I'm gone. Damn it. Just.
They say he said there, cheating whore, go to hell, cheating whore. Now, here, I'm going to play it again.
In between the chest compressions, okay?
when I'm gone.
Now, John, did you just hear that whisper at the end of that?
Yes.
And what did you whisper?
I couldn't hear it.
Okay, I'm going to play it again. Todd, do you whisper cheating whore right there?
No.
So you don't remember what you whispered?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna play another clip for you. Do you know what you whispered there?
No.
Did you hear that? So I'm gonna play that part one more time. The first clip is 6:53 of that second tape, and this second one is right at 0700. Just try to listen really closely. I just wanna know if you remember what you said. Right there, do you say, go to hell, cheating whore?
No.
Now, that time, did you hear it? Because I know the first time I listened to it, I certainly didn't hear anything like that. Not the first time. But once they said that's what he said, then I kind of could hear it. So I'm a little bit dumbfounded that the prosecutor was allowed to put this into court, like into the court record, without the defense objecting to it. Like, to me, that's insane. So they globbed on to the fact that Tristan initially said that the time that his dad was out of his sight was this 1 minute and 40 seconds, which is a really definite number, and that he later admitted that he actually didn't really know how long it was. So their theory is that it was actually quite a bit longer than that.
What was your mom doing after she came out to the hog barn?
She was cleaning light bulb fixtures.
And how was she doing that?
So she would get on a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket, and then she would reach up to these the light bulbs in the ceiling, and there'd be this little glass oval that would go around the light bulb, and it would basically protect the light bulb from being broken and glass discarded on the ground. So sometimes there'd be flies that get in the light fixtures, so she would clean those out.
So would it be fair to say that all three of you were doing different things in the barn?
Yes.
Where were Taylor and Wyatt while the three of you were working in the hog barn?
In the house.
And was anybody else on the farm?
No.
What happened then?
My mom, she said she was getting dizzy, and she said that she was bleeding because she had had a surgery a few days prior to that day. And so, you know, we just, you know, she just said that she was dizzy and bleeding. So, and then she kind of like was getting, she said she was getting really dizzy. So we asked her what was wrong, and she said it was nothing.
Now, Tristan, did you see your mom get dizzy, or did she tell you she got dizzy?
I saw her get dizzy.
What did you see her do?
She kind of like had to, like when she got in a bucket, she had to hold herself from falling off, and she got down and her legs, she was kind of shaky.
What happened then?
Me and my dad both asked her if she was all right.
Did your dad say anything else to your mom at that time?
No, not at that time.
What did you do then?
We continued working.
What happened after you were working?
She kind of did the same thing, but this time we told her that maybe it was better off if she didn't do that job anymore.
Tristan, did you say that to your mom, or did your dad say that to your mom?
We both did.
Did your dad say anything else to your mom?
Yes.
What did he say?
He said, I really don't think it's wise for you to stay out here because, you know, I don't want you falling off and getting hurt.
Did your dad ask your mom to do anything else?
Yes.
What did he say?
He said, if you want to help out, it would mean a lot to us if you would go get the pet cage that was in a barn.
And is that also referred to as like a pet carrier?
Yes.
And where, do you know where that pet carrier was located?
Yes.
Where was it located?
In the red shed, as we call it.
And how far is the red shed from the hog barn that you were in?
From the front of the barn, it's about 30 yards.
Did your mom actually leave the hog barn?
Yes.
And this carrier, it's kind of big, correct?
Yes.
And do you, what would you approximate? Well, could you give us an approximation of how much you think that pet carrier weighs?
Probably maybe 15, 18 pounds. I'm not sure.
And your dad asked your mom to get that after she appeared to be dizzy?
Yes.
Did your dad tell your mom where to put it after she got it?
Yes.
Where did he tell her to put it?
They said two things. He said, if you can get it to the shop, that would help. But if you can get it out of the barn, that would be also helpful. But if you just can't get it, then just leave it. We'll get it.
Now, where specifically in the red shed was that pet carrier located?
It was kind of against the wall. I want to say it was against the southern wall, something like that.
So you actually saw your mom then leave the hog barn?
Yes.
What were you doing after your mom left the hog barn?
I continued her job.
And what was that?
Cleaning the light fixtures.
And what was your dad doing?
He was doing the same thing that he was doing just when we, you know, before she left.
How long were you and your dad in the hog barn together after your mom left?
Probably about another hour and 30 minutes.
Now, while you were in this barn, you were still working?
Yes.
And your dad was doing his job or working as well?
Yes.
At some point, did you lose sight of your dad?
Yes.
Do you know exactly how long your dad wasn't in your sight?
No.
The time that you didn't see your dad is all, you obviously didn't see your mother either.
Yes.
You did not see your mom at that time? Sorry,
yes.
That was confusing.
Yes. Yes.
While you were in the hog barn working for approximately that hour and a half, did you have a watch on?
No.
Did you have your phone with you?
No.
Was there a clock inside the hog barn that you were looking at the time?
No.
Tristan, during that deposition, you estimated that you were out of your dad's sight for approximately 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Yes.
Was that accurate when you gave that testimony?
No.
After you were working in the barn for approximately an hour and a half, did you and your dad had that conversation about how you didn't see the pet carrier by the shop?
Yes.
Where did that conversation with you and your dad take place?
There's an office. It's like an office in the barn that we were working in, and it's where, you know, all the paperwork for the both barns go for, you know, the pigs, the days, and stuff like that, and just a storage area.
Now, did your dad ask you to go and check the red shed?
Yeah.
And did he ask you to go look for your mom or to go look for the pet carrier?
Go look for the pet carrier.
Where did you go then?
I went to the barn.
And when you say barn, that's also the red shed?
Yes, yes.
So sometimes you guys call it the old red barn or the old shed?
Yes.
Where was your dad when you went into the shed?
He was changing his boots that he had put on they say it's wise to change boots so you don't spread disease throughout the barns. So we were both wearing different boots, and he had to fill out some paperwork.
Did you then walk to the red shed or red barn?
Yes.
At that point, was anybody else on the farm?
No.
Where did you go then?
I went to the barn.
What did you see when you walked in?
My mom.
And where was your mom at?
She was just inside the door.
And what position was she in?
She was kind of on her hands and knees, face down.
What did you do?
I yelled for my dad.
Did you see anything that was protruding or sticking out of your mom's body?
Yes.
What did you see?
A corn rake.
And where was that at in relation to your mom's body?
In her center back, probably, somewhere around there.
Did you, was at that point, was your mom responsive?
No.
Did you do anything to see if she was?
Yes.
What did you do?
I checked for a pulse on her neck and her arm, and I put my finger, or my index and my middle finger under her nose to see if she was, you know, if there was breath.
Now, at that point, I think you indicated that's when you called for your dad?
Yes.
What happened then?
He started running.
And the fact that Tristan said his dad never looked out of breath or weird or anything like that was because, now let me read this to you from the appeal document. Only Todd and Tristan knew Amy would be in the red shed when she went to move the pet carrier. Tristan never left the hog barn, but he did lose sight of Todd while they worked, and Tristan could not say how long Todd was out of his sight. The two youngest children were inside the home the entire time. Both Tristan and Todd testified that no one else was on the farm that day, and Todd never heard anyone drive onto their rural property, so there are no other potential assailants. Todd argues it would be impossible for him to run 50-plus yards inside the hog barn, exit a double-latch door on the east end of the barn, sprint 150 yards to the red shed, murder Amy with a corn rake, and then run back in the time it took Tristan to get a drink of water. But Todd's argument rests on the faulty premise, because Tristan could not say how long Todd was out of his sight, that this provided a window of opportunity for Todd to slip out of the barn while Tristan worked. Todd relies strongly on Tristan's testimony that Todd did not appear winded or upset when he saw him again. Here, young Tristan was just in eighth grade when he testified at trial, almost a year after the events in question. Given his young age and the trauma he no doubt experienced as a result of this incident, no one would expect him to remember the day with perfect recall. And juries are free to weigh the credibility of witnesses and believe some, all, or none of the witnesses' testimony. Oh, and just while we're on this appeal, I just want to read to you what this appeal panel said about the 911 call. We note Todd takes issue with the state's reference to a recording of the 911 call Todd made. The state claimed Todd could be heard whispering "cheating whore" and go to hell, cheating whore, as he performed CPR on Amy. Todd denied making these statements during cross-examination, so he claims without evidence to contradict his testimony. We should disregard the state's arguments as it relates to the 911 call. But the recording of the call was admitted onto the record, so the recording itself serves as contradictory evidence. It is clear from the recording Todd mutters something under his breath as he performs CPR on Amy, and while it is barely audible, it is consistent with Todd calling Amy a cheating whore and telling her to go to hell, cheating whore. So, he was convicted and given a life sentence. Now, I'm not disagreeing with the conviction. But I don't think that he was convicted on evidence as much as the fact that he had a motive and then his defense's lack of really doing anything. But it's not necessarily that I don't think he did it. My issue is what all of this implies. So let's break this down on the theory that it went the way the prosecutor says it did. This Todd is furious about the second affair, sends Amy to the red shed, sneaks out of Tristan's sight, kills her, comes back, later sends Tristan, his own son, to go and find his mom. So, and remember, again, going to this red shed is like a really quick thing, right? All she has to do is walk there, grab the pet carrier, put it out into the yard, carry on to the house where her other two kids are. So in that case, like, it's not like he can wait around. Like, he pretty much had to like follow her out of there, follow her out of the barn before she's got time to get this carrier and leave the shed. But Tristan says they actually continued working for a little bit, and it was later that he lost sight of his dad for those 2 minutes or whatever, not right away. So it obviously didn't go down exactly that way. So now instead, we go with the theory that Todd kills Amy as soon as he realizes that they are looking at him for murder. They're not buying that this is an accident. He would have to go to Tristan and say, "Tristan, like, you need to lie for me here. You need to say that we were in the barn and that I never left." Well, by that point, it's too late. Like, Tristan's already told his version of the story, that they both noticed together that she was unsteady on her feet and that they sent her into the red barn to grab this pet carrier as they were sending her back into the house to say, go rest, and that they continued working. So that means that the story would have had to been cooked up before the police even started poking around, because they both recall exactly the same events. The fact that she's cleaning the light fixtures on this stool, that she seems unsteady, and that they both told her to go inside, and Tristan heard Todd asking her to stop at the red barn first, and they both found her, they say, in the exact same position, on her hands and knees with a fork in her back. So a lot of stuff happens when it's only Todd and Tristan there. Now, why would Tristan lie for his father? Well, because it's his dad. Like, I don't know, people do things. Now, could it be that Tristan actually killed Amy and that dad's covering for him? Maybe. I mean, dads would cover for their son, but I don't really think so in this case. I think that Tristan was maybe angry at Amy for cheating, but I don't think enough to kill her in a rage. I think that they were in the barn and they might have started arguing actually while they were in the hog barn, and Amy walked off, or maybe she was sent to this red shed to get the pet carrier, but Todd follows her. He's probably yapping at her the whole way, and they get into the shed. Things get physical. He stabs her with this corn rake. He then goes back to the barn and says, Tristan, we have a problem. Like, there's no way that he came back and told Tristan, like, oh my God, your mom just fell on a rake. Like, go get the truck. Because Tristan, like, that would have been his version of the story, that his dad found her. Not that he, like, why would he say that he was the one that found her? Like, he's not going to cover for his dad if he doesn't think that there's any reason to. Like, why would he say that his dad went to get the pet carrier and found him when he was actually the one that discovered, like... The only way it could have gone down that way is that if Tristan was the one that was maybe out of his father's sight, he kills her. He came back and said, oh my God, she fell in a rake. Now, it is possible that there was someone else, like some complete random stranger in that shed that could have killed her and then ran off. Like, that is possible. It's not probable. Now, is it possible that the medical examiner is wrong and that this whole thing was an accident? Normally, I would say no. But after what the prosecution did with this 911 call, you have to wonder if they didn't get witnesses that kind of fit their narrative. And for some reason, the defense never bothered to find someone that would testify that it was an accident. So if I had been on the jury, I probably would have convicted him, like, based on the fact that once you hear that, those cheating whore words on that 911 call, it's hard not to unhear it. But I don't think that those words were actually ever there. Like, if I'm looking at it from an objective viewpoint, I don't think those words were there. Anyways, he did appeal for a new trial. That was denied. And then in December of 2020, Amy's family filed a wrongful death suit against Todd under the premise that Todd Mullis breached his duty of care to the plaintiffs by stabbing Amy Lynn Mullis to death, and that it was negligent in the homicide. Wherefore, the plaintiffs respectfully request that the court enter judgment against defendant Todd Michael Mullis in an amount to reasonably compensate them for their damages, award the plaintiffs punitive damages and or exemplary damages in an amount sufficient to punish and deter the same or similar conduct by the defendant or others in the future, assess the costs of this matter against the defendant, interest as allowed by the law, and for such further relief as the court deems appropriate under the premises. And then her family is basically seeking enough money that she, quote, would reasonably have been expected to have accumulated as a result of her own effort had she lived out the term of her natural life. In addition to funeral expenses, loss of income to the estate, pain and suffering, loss of enjoyment of life and emotional distress and anguish. Now, I have seen absolutely no update on the outcome of that case. So I'm really curious to know what you think of this. Like, did you hear the words cheating whore like the very first time I played that 911 call? And if you didn't hear it the first time, did you hear it the second time? And if you did, like, can you unhear it now? Like, Am I just off track completely and this is just a plain old murder and I'm just overthinking it? Or was it an accident? Like, what I will say is that if not for the judge allowing that whole 911 call and the leading way that it was testified to, like with saying, yo, you didn't hear that. Like if they had just played the call and if the defense had just given a little bit of effort, maybe trying to find, even if it's just some hack, that find some another medical examiner that to pay someone to say this could have been an accident. I think there could have been reasonable doubt, but it did not go down that way. And a jury of 12 said that he's guilty. So he's guilty. So I am not about to go waving flags outside the courthouse. I personally think he's shady as hell. He probably had something to do with his wife's death. I just think it's a really odd story, and I think it could have happened in a number of different ways. So the whole point of me telling you this story is, well, I don't really think I have a point. I just found it really interesting. So I told it to you so that you have something to listen to while you drink your tea and drive yourself to work. So that was the murder, if we want to call it a murder, of Amy Mullis. Please, in the comments, let me know what you think happened, how you think it happened. Was it murder? If it was murder, who did it? If it was an accident, how you think it happened? I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on it. And I'm going to be back again next week with another case. And in the meantime, you know what to do with your rates and reviews and signing up for the exclusive content and all that good stuff. And I will see you again. As always, thank you so much for listening.